My guest on Takes on the World today is Napoleon Gomez Urrutia. He served as General Secretary of the National Mining and Metal Workers Union Mexico since his unanimous election in 2002 and was re-elected in 2008 for another six-year term. Educated at Oxford as an economist, unusual for a labor leader, Gomez graduated with honors from the Department of Economics at the National Autonomous University of Mexico. Prior to succeeding his father as the head of the miners' union, he served as director of the Mexican Mint for 12 years and the only Mexican to ever serve as international president of the Mint Directors Conference, a position he held for 12 years. In 2011, he was a recipient of AFL-CIO's International Mini Kirkland Human Rights Award, and the same year he was nominated for the Edelstein Prize and Arthur Svensson International Prize for Trade Union Rights. He is also a member of the Executive Committee of Industrial Global Union, which represents 50 million workers in 140 countries in the mining, energy, and manufacturing sectors, which is engaged in the fight for better working conditions and trade union rights around the world. And he works closely with the United Steelworkers. Most recently, he has written a history of the labor struggles, which I was just talking to you about, and the obstacles he and other Mexican workers have faced, entitled Collapse of Dignity, The Story of a Mining Tragedy, and The Fight Against Greed and Corruption in Mexico, published by Ben Bella Books. Bienvenidos, Napoleon Gomez, to Takes on the World.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I really appreciate this opportunity.
I'm glad to have you here. You know, earlier in the program, I explained to our listeners that you would be calling from Canada, where you were living in exile while directing the day-to-day affairs of Mexico's miners' union. Since the reason you have been living in Vancouver and not in Mexico is reflective of your efforts to protect the interests of your union members and workers throughout Mexico, perhaps you could begin by explaining how that situation came about.
Yes, sure. Thank you, Jeff. But first, let me tell you that I'm the president of the National Mine, Metal, and Steelworkers Union in Mexico, and I've been presiding the union from Canada in the last 7 years. I have been reelected six times unanimously in different conventions by all the delegates and members of the union, and I'm very proud to serve my union. I've been in Canada because in February 2006, in the north of Mexico, in a coal mine called Pasta de Conchos, the mine exploded and 65 miners died. And after trying to rescue our colleagues, on the fifth day of trying to rescue them, the company, Grupo Mexico, decided to shut down the mine, and completely supported and backed by the government of then Vicente Fox, and they abandoned our colleagues without knowing if they were dead or alive. So it was on the fifth day of trying to rescue them. It was a big shame, a terrible shame. So I accused the company of industrial homicide, what it may be called corporate murder in the United States or the North America. And immediately they launched a smear campaign of attacks and aggressive acts and threats, even death threats, include against my family, against myself, against my colleagues. So I had to leave Mexico in those terrible conditions of really being repressed and politically persecuted by the Mexican government of Vicente Fox, colluding with this nasty company, Grupo Mexico. This is the reason why I've been in Canada since end of March 2006, and I live in Canada and I preside the union from Canada.
Well, they even, the Mexican government even had Interpol put you on this list, which the Canadian government scoffed at. But recently you've been taken off that list, I see.
Yes, as part of the political persecution, they issue a red alert from Interpol, Mexico Interpol, which is just an office of the Attorney General office. And so after a few years of having this red alert and being trapped in Canada, not being able to travel abroad, what I did is I present, according to my legal counselors, a lawsuit against Interpol, Interpol Mexico and Interpol International. We present a complaint. And finally, we succeed in March of this year of unanimously by a tribunal in Mexico to dismiss and cancel an order Interpol to cancel the red alert. And International Interpol did the same. And this was, and what the International Interpol, which is based in France, in Lyon, France, what they did was really a very important issue, because it was like an international tribunal condemning Mexico for the government of Mexico for sending them false documents and information in order to issue this red alert. And they said, you know, that Mexico didn't comply with the rules and regulations of international Interpol, that they immediately were going to cancel the red alert. And if ever Mexico issued another one against me, they should be approved by international Interpol, not by Mexico. So they didn't trust the government. It has been a real shame for the Mexican government and a big moral and political victory for our union, for ourselves. And so it was very important. And we succeeded this in March 2013, I mean, just a few months ago, sorry, 3 months ago.
Well, false documents play an important role in this amazing story you've told in your book, which deals with the corruption. Years ago, I spent some time living in Mexico, and I saw corruption there. And this corruption seems to go from one administration to another, from Vicente Carlos Salinas de Gortari, who privatized Mexico, to Vicente Fox, to Felipe Calderon, and now we have Enrique Peña Nieto. Is there going to be any improvement?
Well, it seems to be that there will be more, liberal issues. They are a little bit more open what they used to be with the previous two governments of Vicente Fox and Felipe Calderon, the right-wing governments of conservative governments. And it's been now 6 months since Peña Nieto is in the government. We have beginning to have more dialogue and discussions with the government, particularly with the Secretary of Labor and the Secretary of the Interior, but we haven't solved this conflict completely. So at least we have dialogue and negotiations that we lost with the two previous governments. We didn't have any communications with them. We just dealt with the negotiations and collective bargaining agreements directly with the companies without any government participation, which was good, I mean, in a way, because they usually act, the conservative governments, against unions or trade unions, against workers' rights and human rights. So this is what's much better what we did. But this government seems to be a little bit more open. We still don't know exactly what direction are they going to take. We hope that as soon they define their political labor policies and respect for union democracy and freedom of association. This is what we're expecting from this government, and so let's wait a little bit more and in order to see what happens.
You know, recently the world was paying attention to the collapse of the garment workers' factory in Bangladesh, where 1,100 garment workers died as a result of the factory owner's decision to keep open a visibly unsafe structure. And he's now being prosecuted by the Bangladeshi government. Yet when there's a fatal accident in an unsafe mine, as happened in Ponce de Conchos and Chile, the owners always find a way to avoid prosecution. How do you see this situation in which, whether it's a workplace in a mine or in a factory, as part of the way capital is operating against workers throughout the world, however they're working?
I think this is something that is happening all over the world. Unfortunately, there are many parallel cases like in Bangladesh or in Sudan or Colombia or China or even in some cases in the United States or Canada. But in Mexico, of course, I think it is a real shame that governments don't enforce the laws to control the greed and ambition and the corruption of companies, because they usually tend to neglect the safety conditions and the working places, because they don't spend money on that, because it doesn't give them production or profits. So when these cases happen, for instance, in Ponce de Conchos, in this coal mine, 65 miners died. And you know, when the company shut down the mine on the fifth day of trying to rescue them, they abandoned our colleagues. And today we still have 63 bodies abandoned in the mine. And it's a terrible shame. I mean, we all saw what happened in Chile when in 2010, 33 miners were trapped in a collapse of a mine. And 17 days later of trying to rescue them, they found them alive. In Mexico, they were abandoned on the fifth day. And they were rescued, all of them alive in Chile, on the 69 days. And one by one, they were, I mean, we all saw that, and we all watched on TV and in different media that they were rescued alive. So it was a moral victory for the people of, for the miners and the people of Chile. And in Mexico, it was a shame that we still have today, after more than 7 years, 63 bodies, at 120 meters, Jeff. 120 meters depth. I mean, it was not a very deep mine. In Chile, it was 750 meters. I mean, it's a real shame what happened in Mexico, abandoned our colleagues. And just because the company didn't want everybody to know the terrible safety conditions in which they were operating the mine, and that we as a union have been complaining against them for at least a year and a half. We had three strikes against them, and they never did anything, because they were supported and backed by the corruption of some of the government officials at that time. So it was terrible what happened. I mean,
well, even in this country, the funding for OSHA, the safety safeguards in mines and workplaces, is always being underfunded. There aren't enough inspectors to go around and inspect factories and workplaces in this country, the richest in the world. It's a crime.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, the news from Mexico, as I mentioned earlier, is really distorted. I mean, I lived in Mexico years ago, and I would read the newspapers, and the stories between U.S. and Mexican relations, what was going on there, were totally different than what you see in the American media, which has, I guess, following a certain corporate agenda. And so we don't realize the effects of, let's say, NAFTA on the people of Mexico, or the effects of the Walmart, the giant Walmarts in Mexico, on small stores and tiendas and businesses, or the effect of having Mexico now being forced to import corn, which was it's the main source of food over these last decades. And perhaps you could comment on the effect that NAFTA has had on the Mexican economy.
Yes. Well, you know, we had great expectations about NAFTA when it was approved. And we thought that this was going to bring better opportunities for Mexican people, more jobs, decent jobs, well-paid jobs, and also to keep the balance between the commercial trade between the United States, Canada, and Mexico. But the real truth is that this has been, the NAFTA agreement has benefited only a few companies. We still have big problems of unemployment, even today. I mean, the official figures is a terrible unemployment in Mexico, the lack of opportunities, which is being reflected in the migration that constantly happens, and even people risking their lives in order to cross the border or come to the United States or Canada. So this hasn't been solved. NAFTA, you know, when we thought that we were going to create better jobs, then they say, well, people will stay in Mexico, will be working in a much happy environment with more respect for the workers' rights and the human rights. And this, the real truth is, this hasn't happened. This is why we continue having this migration. So I think it was a big disappointment. Only for a few were benefiting or have been benefiting from this NAFTA agreement. And it has had also reflecting problems in United States economy and in Canada too. So I think they didn't do it properly. And even there is a chapter on labor rights under the NAFTA agreement, and Mexico is not respecting that. I mean, it's violating every single day the workers' rights, and so this is terrible, and union autonomy and freedom of association. So that doesn't help either. So this has to be changed. We have to go for a model in which a new economic and social model that put people first, instead of degrees and ambition of companies.
No, you write in your book that the lack of justification to explain the wide disparities in wages paid in Mexico and those paid in Canada and the United States to doing similar work in industrial sections, and it's 15 times more in advanced countries when the prices for, let's say, the metal produced and sold on the market is the same. And this is something that obviously the corporate interest exploits of the max, and it seems to be persist and persist and persist.
Yeah, Yeah, this is, I mean, this is terrible. I mean, we have, for instance, in the mining industry, as you said, we do the same job, the miners in Mexico, that the miners in the United States or Canada or in Europe or all over. We use more or less the same technology. We use the same methods of exploitation and exploring mining. And the final product, which are the metals, are caught at the same price because they're caught and priced at the international levels. So if we do the same, if we produce the metals that have the same price, why wages in the United States or Canada should be about 15 times the wages in Mexico? Well, it's the only explanation is the degree of exploitation of our working force and of the natural resources of Mexico. So we have a big problem and serious problem in Mexico because governments, they don't enforce and protect the interests and of the workers and the middle class because they are just trying to create a market with low wages to attract foreign investment. And they say that will be the solution to create more job opportunities. But it's not true. The unemployment has increased. The greed has, of course, increased. And this is a kind of wrong model of economic policy that is affecting the vast majority of the Mexican population. And it's just serving, you know, creating exploitation. I can give you an example. China, 10 years ago, the workers in China, Mexico was about three times above the workers in China, the salaries and the wages of the workers in China. Today, we were about the same, and probably China is still even now bringing a little bit higher than in Mexico. It's terrible. I mean, how can we be so stagnant and in terms of wage increasing? This explains all this exploitation that has been happening of the labor force and of the natural resources of Mexico, unfortunately.
Well, there seems to be a pattern going back well over the decades, a pattern determined by the corporations in the United States to keep Mexican wages low and force a certain percentage of Mexicans to seek low-wage, difficult work inside the United States. And there's always these debates about it. But yet there are many corporations, of course, the big farm who have relied on cheap labor from Mexico, people who are undocumented, they call, you know, illegal, without papers, who are forced to work incredible, much longer hours than they would work in Mexico or any other place. And this seems to be a pattern, and they make these debates in Congress about it, but somehow or other they keep this pattern in place and a way to keep Mexico dependent on the United States. Maybe a comment on that.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is exactly a way of being dependent economically and commercially from the United States. And this is, this is not an economic policy that is benefiting the vast majority of Mexicans. I mean, all of you have benefited from these policies. And today I was just reading this morning the figures by international organization in terms of the wealth distribution of income of Mexico. And they say, you know, only 100,045 Mexicans in a country of almost 120 million are the multimillionaires, the richest people who have been benefiting of all this situation and the dependence of the Mexican economy on the U.S. economy. And it's terrible, and it has increased because of this situation. Low wages to attract investments, which is the wrong policy. And then they don't create enough employment opportunities, so they migrate. And they are affecting the policies and competing with jobs in the United States to Canada. In our union, we were fighting. This is why I have been, attack our union, because we're the most democratic and independent union in Mexico. Because we were fighting for better wages and benefits for the workers or the miners, taking advantage of the boom of the mining industry during the last 7 years and the big demand. And this would have benefited, creating better jobs in Mexico and stop the competition and migration of workers. And they didn't like that because they were, our wages in the mining industry, I mean, even if you compare, are three or four times above the national average of the workers in the rest of the country. And still we are very much behind the these wages of United States and Canada. So this is a wrong policy. It's not benefiting everybody except only a few. And this cannot continue. This is a wrong model. Will sooner or later will bring social instability in a country like Mexico.
I'm speaking with Napoleon Gomez Urrutia, who is the president of the National Miners Union in Mexico. We're talking about his book in Mexico, his book Collapse of Dignity, The Story of a Mining Tragedy and the Fight Against Greed and Corruption in Mexico. The privatization of Salinas Gortari had a devastating effect on Mexico. But even before that, there used to be a law or rule that a Mexican national had to own 52% of a Mexican corporation. But it seems that 52%, a lot of it was money from the United States. I lived in a village in Michoacán, in Guanajuato, back in the early 70s, Chamacro, which had wonderful weather. They had wonderful arable land, but they were growing food for cattle in the United States for Purina. And the people in that village realized if they did not have to grow that, and they were forced by the banks to grow that, they could have lived independently and self-sufficiently in that small town. But they are not allowed to do that by this whole web that starts north of the border and goes down into Mexico, into the banks. So the people's lives in Mexico are really controlled by United States corporations.
Yeah, this is true. And by the banks and by the media. I mean, they're all together. They control the media. They control the banks. So the financial resources, which could go. I mean, usually they don't go to these small communities or villages or producers, but when they go, I mean, they are completely restricted to do what they want to, or what they need to, for to satisfy the needs and the demands from big corporations and international corporations. So it's a big distortion of what has been happening. And really, when this privatization came after the government of Carlos Salinas, for instance, in the mining and steel industry, most of the companies belonged to the state, to the nation, and they were privatized. So public wealth was transferred to private hands. And then, of course, came the degree of exploitation, which increased very high after the privatization. And so this is something that has been affecting the future of Mexico. We used to be the owners of our natural resources. In the Constitution, it's established that all the underground resources of Mexico belong to the nation, oil, gas, and minerals, and they are given to private producers through concessions. But they give them in terms that are most of them, they don't pay taxes. They tend to express, and they have different accountability so that they can say they don't have profits, and according to the Mexican law, the labor law, 10% of the profit should be shared with the workers. And of course, they hide the profits because so this is a way of not sharing profit with the workers and not paying taxes. So, I mean, this is why the degree of concentration of wealth has become so unequal and benefits only a few. And as I said, being neighbors of the United States, this is a big problem potentially for the United States and Canada. Because things cannot be just continue like this for ages or centuries. I mean, this has to be a limit. And this is why I'm saying that we need a new economic and social model that put people first, not the greed of corruption of companies.
No, you write in your book how the corporations avoid taxes, and then there's a flight of Mexican capital investing overseas, which in fact starves the economy. He's gone.
Yeah, yes, it is true. I mean, even the figures say that $800 billion of the wealth of these Mexicans are out of Mexico. $800 billion for an economy like Mexico will help so much to pay the debt and invest in really productive activities. So it is something that I mean, it's a very unequal model of growth that it will bring, as I said, social problems eventually. And if this is not changed soon, I mean, we need a new, different economic model for the country and to help people and create these new opportunities. So I hope that things change with this new government. You know, when I wrote my book and Collapse of Dignity, and I brought all these figures of how companies are avoiding paying taxes, how they are just exploiting the natural resources of the country, and the opening of the company or the economy. For instance, today, 75 to 80% of foreign investment in mining is Canadian. So they go there, exploit the natural resources, they grow, they create very poor paid jobs, they exploit the natural resources, they don't pay taxes, and of course all these profits are going abroad again. And they, of course, the pollution and all those issues, I mean, they are just completely neglected in many cases. So this is something has to change, and I hope that we are hoping and working together with international organizations and industry or global union and to define new policies that can help Mexico to change the direction which is taking, because sooner or later we will have problems eventually. And I hope that this can be prevented and avoided and for the benefit of everybody.
Well, it was, of course, NAFTA was not designed by workers for the benefit of workers.
Yes.
So this it was. I mean, people up here opposed NAFTA, and I remember at the San Francisco Labor Council meeting where Nancy Pelosi, who was a member of Congress and a very important Democratic Party, she spoke about it and made this long talk about it. And one of the members stood up in the audience, and I won't say what he said to her because we're on the air, but everyone knew it. She was talking, she was blowing smoke, and Bill Clinton was blowing smoke. But the idea this was going to benefit all the workers has never been the goal of capital. That's a basic, maximum profit is their goal. What about, you know, there was some really hope a few years ago with the development of the PRD as a competitor to PRI and PAN. What has happened with that, with the PRD?
Yes, you know, the PRD in the 80s, it was created, this party, which is the left-wing party, and it came after a division on the PRI party. And they split and they created progressive left wing. So they went into elections on that first year against Carlos Salinas, exactly with Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas, the candidate. And everybody thought that he won the elections. But suddenly, in the middle of counting the vote, they said that the system failed. They canceled the counting because after the first four or five states that they were counting, the PRD were ahead on the votes. So they declared that, you know, the elections, they had to count again. And when they count, of course, Salinas was elected. And then they compete again with this man, Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas, and later with the man, Andrés Manuel López Obrador. They play a very important role. Now they are the second political force in Mexico. They have been close in the elections, even in this last election of last year against the PRI. You know, the PRI won, according to the official figures, for slightly over 3 million votes over the PRD, the second political force. That is still very strong. And, of course, they complain about, you know, frauds and things. But they are a strong opposition political party. And I think they will continue to play that role. And the right-wing party, the Conservative Party, or Fox, the PAN party, they went into the third place. From being in power for 12 years, from the year 2000 to the year 2012, they went to the third place on the political arena in Mexico. So they are still potentially, I mean, a strong force, political force, to be maybe elected in the future. So they have a national influence, particularly among the middle classes, and academics and progressive politicians. I think they have a very strong force among landowners Yes, and indigenous communities, they are very strong in those areas, the PRD, the Lewy Party of Mexico.
Well, that's good to hear. Let's switch to a very important topic north of the border, is this question of immigration. And when they say immigration, of course, immigration, even though they're people come from other countries in Latin America as well as Europe, but they're talking about immigration from Mexico. How do you see this struggle, and what role are the American labor unions playing in it?
Well, I think most of them are supporting the new immigration law. First, you have to give certainty to the 11 million people who have been living in the shadows of the U.S. economy without no rights. The problem that I've been focusing is that a lot of conservative forces are putting pressure on the government to have a much more delay and control on this immigration, in this new immigration law. But I think sooner or later, the United States is a country of immigrants, and same as Canada. And while they should close the door to people who come and contribute to generate the wealth of the nation and help. So I think it has to be, and the American, the unions like the AFL-CIO, most of the unions are focusing on this progressive idea of creating certainty for the people who migrate and contribute to the national wealth of the economy in the United States. And I think we should do that. The problem is that I don't know how much they're going to be restricted or controlled on the law which is finally approved. I hope that it will be really representing democracy as the government of the United States has been claiming all over the world, but it has to be a real effect, a real decision internally in the United States, and give this certainty to the immigrants that have been living in the United States, as I said, in the shadows.
Well, the xenophobia of Euro-Americans about Mexicans and the distorted propaganda about immigrants from Mexico coming here and taking advantage of all the welfare programs that are offered, which of course is nonsense, some of the hardest jobs and the lowest paying jobs fall to Mexican immigrants, even those with papers. This is our history. Any last word before we come to the end of our hour here? It's been a really pleasure talking to you. Anything you have to say to Americans or to our listeners up here in Northern California? We have a very large Mexican-American community here. Anything you'd like to say to us?
Yep. Yes, thank you very much, Jeff. Yes, and I appreciate this opportunity. Yes, I'd like to say that I think and I hope that the people from the United States and Canada and watch more carefully what is happening in Mexico. The insecurity that it has created and developed in Mexico is a consequence of this lack of opportunities. Today, 7 million of young people, 7 million, they don't have education, they don't have jobs. So they are desperate to survive. So these are the kind of people who are being recruited by the drug cartels, and this has created insecurity. Also, we don't create a really serious economic policy program and model in Mexico to bring people first. It will be a big problem in the future because we are not creating the opportunities, and the government is not enforcing these opportunities or the greed of the companies in order to stop this illegal migration.
Napoleon,
so we should work together and watch out and develop a social conscience in Mexico.
Well, thank you.
I think international solidarity helps very much to change things, and I hope that this will be also analyzed and looked carefully from the United States point of view, not only because of their interests, but of the interests of the whole region of North America. So I really appreciate, and I hope that everybody can share my story, Colas of Dignity, and can read it, because this is it's a real story. And it has a lot of messages for the future, messages for the future of hope, ambition, for the future of the new generations to come.
Muchas gracias, Napoleon Gomez Urrutia, head of the Miners Union at Mexico. Thanks so much for being our guest today on Takes on the World.
Muchas gracias, Jeff. I appreciate and Thank you very much for this opportunity. Thank you very much.